Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, here with Rob Moore, also co-hosting and doing the news for us today. On today's program, we are going to be heading off to Mexico, and we're going to be speaking with Gerardo Tristan Alvarado. And we'll see if Rob recovers from his coughing. And we're going to be speaking with him about a very exciting new coalition that has been formed. It includes 13 animal rights groups, animal welfare groups in Mexico, and they are attempting to provide a united national agenda to Mexico, which includes both legal reforms and educational reforms to include animals and to think about animals differently in Mexico. So we're very excited to speak with him today. We're going to find out all about the coalition and about the treatment of animals in Mexico. But before we do that, we're going to hear some news.
Some news, first of all, those in the Toronto area, mark your calendars, because a guest we had on just a short while ago, Dr. Neil Bernard, president and founder of Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, will give a free lecture titled Breakthroughs in Nutrition and Health Research on Thursday, July 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Toronto Reference Library. And I highly recommend you check that out. Again, that's Thursday, July 13th, 7:30 p.m., the Toronto Reference Library at Yonge and Bloor. An interesting opinion piece from the Vancouver Courier, an upcoming United Nations report, pegs the world's oil, gas, and mining industries as responsible for nearly two-thirds of all violations of human rights, environmental laws, and international labor standards. The report also determined that the food and beverage industries are a distant second. So if anyone wants to act globally and think locally, they should focus more on the gas pump than the dinner plate, right? Actually, the reverse probably holds true. Recent research at the University of Chicago indicates that gas-guzzling motor vehicles are less a factor in energy consumption and climate change than the kind of food we eat. The researchers calculated the carbon compound connections of both a typical vegan diet and a U.S.-style carnivorous diet. They followed the energy pathways from farm to processing to distribution to cooking and consumption. In an article in The Guardian, Jonathan Port summed up the findings. An average burger man emits the equivalent of 1.5 tons more carbon dioxide every year than the standard vegan. By comparison, were you to trade in your conventional gas guzzler for a state-of-the-art Prius hybrid, your carbon dioxide savings would amount to little more than 1 ton per year. Porritt, Program Director of Forum for the Future and Chairman of the UK Sustainable Development Commission, concludes that each of us could make a bigger contribution to reducing emissions of greenhouse gases by becoming a vegan than by converting to an eco-friendly car. The biggest energy consumption factor in food production involves meat. It's not just the vast amount of arable land devoted to raising food animals and the significant amount of vegetable matter and water needed to create a single pound of animal protein. The amount of gas and oil involved in the food production of meat exceeds that of other foodstuffs. Hence, the data on the eco-benefits of vegan diet versus hybrid cars. It's also a given that meat-free diets promote better health. A mass aversion toward meat diets could and would translate into huge savings to our maxed-out healthcare system. The author closes the article by saying, I could no more turn fully vegan than I could join Opus Dei. But it's not necessary for anyone to be guilted into the herbivore agenda. Simply passing on a burger at the next meal matters if we're talking incremental moves by large numbers of people. Eschewing meat, even if it's only once in a while, is one of the most potent political decisions a person can make, given the human rights abuses associated with the globe-gobbling resource extraction industries, which in turn feed the chemical-dependent agribiz matrix. Next, from the SeattlePI.com, the chicken coops in Indonesia's earthquake-flattened Pentong village are filled with salvaged TVs, cooking utensils, refrigerators, and scores of people. Aid workers fear they could also contain bird flu. Many in Pentong and in a broad swath of Java Island lost their homes when a powerful earthquake struck a week ago, killing more than 6,200 people. Most survivors are living under plastic tarps or in any other shelter they can find. Aid officials say they're worried the survivors could catch bird flu. The number of human cases has rocketed in Indonesia in the past month, and some cases have been reported in districts around the quake zone. At least 37 Indonesians have died. Next from Reuters, horrified by reports from Asia of chickens being set on fire or buried alive in plastic bags, U.S. animal welfare groups are gearing up with trepidation for the arrival of bird flu and the probability of mass killings to contain it. Now, as experts suspect the deadly H5N1 virus could find its way from Asia to Alaska this summer, they are lobbying the food industry and the U.S. state veterinarians to conduct the expected slaughter of millions of poultry humanely. Suffocation, starvation, bludgeoning, bleeding, and poisoning should be explicitly prohibited in your planning documents, says a letter being sent by the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals to officials in all 50 states. We urge you to dictate in writing that only humane methods of killing are used, the PETA letter adds. Some 200 million birds have been culled in Asia, Europe, Africa, and the Middle East since 2003 to limit the spread of the H5N1 avian virus, which has killed more than 125 people. Mass euthanasia and disposal training programs are being carried out around the United States. One method demonstrated in Central California last month used firefighting foam that can smother thousands of birds in a few minutes. Although reluctant to sanction slaughter at all, PETA and other welfare groups are urging the controlled atmosphere killing method, which uses a mixture of carbon dioxide and nitrogen, or argon. Terry Bernardo, director of the Association of Veterinarians for Animal Rights, said mass slaughter was, quote, a tragic method of dealing with disease. I think it is unfortunate that we have all grown accustomed to the food industry telling the public that this is how you deal with these outbreaks, she said. And from UPI.com, out of Wales, two copies of a report on meat tainted with mad cow disease at Welsh schools turned up in government archives after officials said all had been lost. The ITV program Wales This Week used the Freedom of Information Act to find one copy in the archives of the National Assembly's Agriculture Division. Three people died of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease between 1999 and 2002. All had apparently been infected years earlier from eating meat served at their schools. The missing document was known as the Keene Report after the lawyer who headed a 1990 inquiry into conditions at the slaughterhouse where meat for the schools was butchered. The investigation found that a cattle dealer had paid the slaughterhouse to use the facilities to kill diseased animals. Finally, from USA Today, if you have the taste and the wallet for foie gras the way they serve it at Philadelphia's swank Le Bec Fin, you'd better run over there and order it now. The city may soon join Chicago and California in banning the duck liver delicacy. It would also stop cruelty to ducks, according to animal welfare groups. To make foie gras, French for fatty liver, farm-raised Moulard ducks are force-fed corn through a funnel put down their necks until their livers expand to at least six times normal size. Those who love foie gras and those who abhor it agree there's no other way to make the silky food that, when it gets to a restaurant plate, can cost more than $20 for a two-ounce portion. What's at issue is whether it hurts the ducks and whether local government has any business telling people what they can't eat. It's egregious cruelty and it's unnecessary, says Jean Boston of the Farm Sanctuary, an animal welfare advocacy group and anti-foie gras campaigner. Treating other animals that way takes a piece out of our own humanity. Chefs, restaurateurs, and producers say that ducks are not hurt by the force feeding and enlarged livers, and that banning foie gras is a government intrusion into people's right to eat what they wish. After foie gras, they predict, the next items on the banned menu will be lobster, boiled alive, rabbit, a popular pet, and eggs from hens raised in cages, already eliminated or reduced in the dining halls of 85 colleges. A national push by animal welfare groups to ban foie gras led Philadelphia City Council member Jack Kelly to introduce legislation last week to ban it. It is already coming off the menu in California, which in 2004 set a 2012 deadline to end production and sale. Last month, Chicago imposed its own ban despite protests from chefs and the State Restaurant Association and ridicule from Mayor Richard Daley. Israel and several European countries have banned foie gras production. And that's all I got for this week's news. Remember to check out next week, I'll probably mention this next week again, Dr. Neil Bernard, Thursday, July 13th at 7:30 at the Toronto Reference Library. It's a free lecture titled Breakthroughs in Nutrition and Health Research.
And also next week, if we get the books in time, we're still waiting on them, we're going to be speaking with Jim Mason, who is one of the co-authors of the new book called The Way We Eat, which is co-authored with Peter Singer. We're going to be talking with him about the new book that is contingent upon us getting the book so we can read it, so we're actually able to interview him about the text. We're going to take a short break, but we're going to come back with a very exciting interview. We're going to be speaking with Gerardo Tristan Alvarado. He is an Aztec descendant, a Mexican citizen. He's currently living in Oklahoma City. And he is the communications director for the National Coalition for the Welfare of Animals, a very ambitious project coming out of Mexico. It unites 13 different groups across 8 different states in Mexico. And we're going to find out about the unified national agenda that they are proposing. Please stay tuned to Animal Voices. Hello and welcome back to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. Today's program is with members of the National Coalition for the Welfare of Animals. This is part of a larger project these folks are involved with to unify the animal movements, the animal groups in Mexico. And I'm very pleased to welcome to the program Gerardo Tristan Alvarado. He is a 39-year-old animal rights activist. He's been involved with these issues for about the past 3 years, and he's a communications person with the National Coalition for the Welfare of Animals. He's also an Aztec descendant, a Mexican citizen. He's currently living in Oklahoma, although we are reaching him in Mexico. And he's currently working with a rescue group called Latin Friends, and he's very interested in animal rights issues regarding class and cultures in respect to the animal movement. So we're pleased to have him on the program today. Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. Yes, pretty happy to be in the program. Hello to all the listeners in Toronto.
You said that you have another person with you today.
Yes. She can introduce herself.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name is Ana Ortega, and I'm from a group from here, from Monterrey, Mexico, and also is Wanda, my dog with me. And she says hi to everybody else.
Thank you for being on the show. I wanted to apologize right off the bat because we are not able right now to have our translator on, who was going to do some Spanish translation in case Gerardo needed it, but she's not here yet, so we're going to have to wait on that. But we're really glad to have you on the show today, and we're very excited to speak with you about the National Coalition for the Welfare of Animals. So tell us about the National Coalition for the Welfare of Animals. Why was this created?
Well, I would like to, you know, first say that the National Coalition is a very, very recent effort. The National Coalition was created in February, and we saw that there was the urgency of, you know, come all together and make some kind of a unified statement to the society and to the government. And we in Mexico have been working, you know, in different front on the animal rights movement for the past 20 years. But, you know, the problems regarding animals are growing as we become a globalized citizen. And so, you know, we are all swamped with the day-to-day things to do. And we became weaker, so we don't really have a strong presence in society. So, we were talking about the project of the first summit of domestic animals in Monterrey. And then when we were talking about that, we started to discuss about the necessity to be united, you know, and make a coalition in Mexico. We just, you know, decided that in February. And, in fact, we're just going to meet for the first time all in Monterrey tomorrow. So I'm really excited.
And there's 13 different groups that are involved. What are some of the different groups that are involved with the coalition?
Yeah, we have a representation from a lot of states. We have people from these states that caught the summit, Nuevo León, from the city of Monterrey, we have LUCA, which is the group that is inviting to this summit. And we have three groups in Mexico City, the capital, that work with a variety of issues regarding animal welfare. We have some more specialized groups. We have a group that just dedicates to inform and to educate people through the mass media in Mexico City too. And we have two groups, one group that is a group that in San Luis Potosí, Central Mexico, that work with education but also has some kind of ongoing discussion with animal activists all over Mexico and internationally. It's called Animalia Sun. And we have people from the south, from Guadalajara and Querétaro and Cuernavaca. So we cover, we are all working in different fronts. We have people that work with domestic animals, people that work with animals that are in danger of being extinct, and people that work with farm issues, you know, all the farm animals, and wild animals and wildlife.
Why did people want to form the coalition, you know, when there were already so many groups working on these issues? Why did it seem important to bring them all together?
Because we don't really seem to have an impact in this space. And we, you know, in Mexico, we cannot really have a power to negotiate with the governmental, you know, people, the institutions. And we are not really taken seriously. We are kind of like non-existent groups. So we thought that, you know, that way would have more impact and more presence and power for negotiations with the government. Also, we are working in different fronts, like I say, and we are not really, really progressing ourselves. Like, there is people that just work with domestic animals, but they don't know anything about all the other problems regarding animals. They don't know anything about law, you know, about animal theory, you know, anything like that. So we thought that, you know, for ourselves, it would be good, you know, if we all open up a discussion and, you know, just collaborate, you know, and help each other with ideas and strategies. So it's going in different directions. This coalition is going to help us, you know, in our local group, and it's going to help us to be more visible right here in Mexico.
Sounds good. It's very exciting news.
Yeah. It's very challenging, you know, because we are so different. We have very different views and backgrounds and ways of working and experiences. And so we all came together, and so far it's been really good. The National Coalition started working four different areas. So we work in law and work in education and communication, and another one especially for campaigns, events, and raising money. And so we start to work right away when we're created, and it's been going really good. You know, we've all been open to each other and supportive, and, you know, the areas have been, like, supposed to be really interesting things that we all going to heard and, you know, take a look now in the summit tomorrow, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's been going great, and I think just that, you know, we just need to settle or, you know, shape some of the logistics of this coalition and the, how you say that, the juridic persona, or, you know, legal character for the society. So we're going to be working that. We're going to be working a lot, starting tomorrow and finishing on Friday.
So what are some of, I mean, what are some of the legal changes that you would like to see happen? You said at the beginning of the interview that things are getting worse in Mexico for animals, given this globalized context that they're now in. So I guess the first part of my question is, what are the legal changes that you would like to see happen, the coalition would like to see happen, and how are animals currently being treated in Mexico? I know that's a very broad question.
Well, regarding the law, the group that is doing law, we have seven people there. This is the most advanced, you know, area in the coalition that has been working. They are taking a look at all the laws that we have in Mexico. We have some animal welfare laws in Mexico since 1871. So there are some really, really old that punish the abuse of animals. And they have been modified 3 times, you know, in Mexico. But they are really weak laws. They don't include many different species of animals. And, of course, we don't have animal liberation movement. So they need to, you know, be an update. Personally, you know, the law for the protection and welfare of animals, I think, in Mexico is really, really weak, and it's not really effective punishing, you know, or making people really follow it. So it's weak on this area. I don't know how the legal people would say this area. But they are taking a look, and they've been working, you know, for several months now, and they are coming up with more integral law, you know, that they're hoping to propose in 2007 and, you know, bring it to the government in Mexico so we can talk about federal law in Mexico for the protection of animals that include, you know, many, many specifications. For example, regarding to dogs and cats, we wanted to put forward the law of, you know, forced sterilization, or it has to be mandatory. That just, like, you know, would be one aspect of this big, huge law. But I myself, I'm part of the communication group, and I've been working, like I say, with other issues regarding culture class. But I'm not really, really versed in the law.
Right.
I know certain things when I talk to the coalition, the people that is working with this. But I know that there was a law that is trying to go to the surface and being passed, but it's just not moving forward. But the people that was being proposed in the city, but they say they need a lot of more work too. That is too weak. So they are trying to work with a multidisciplinary group to take a look, very, very close look at the law regarding welfare of animals in Mexico.
And what about the treatment of animals? You said you've been involved with looking at animal cruelty. So what are some of the major issues facing animals right now? How are they treated? What are some of the conditions in Mexico?
Yeah, well, I mentioned that we have this impact of globalization, right? And Mexico, you know, is a country that is in economical crisis, is not doing very good. So one of the most bad things that happened since, you know, we went down in the 90s with the economy is that people is being more and more exploiting animals for money. So you have a huge traffic in Mexico of, you know, exotic species within Mexico and going to the rich countries too. And it's growing more and more, and it's more organized. You have you know, the indiscriminate exploitation of domestic animals, of the, what you call that, puppy mills, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
In Mexico, they are really, really, really popular. Like in my city, you see the newspaper, and there is a complete page of ads of people that are breeders, you know, that they don't have any standard or any rule for breeding animals. And you know, the situation with cruelty is getting worse. I mean, people is more frustrated, and they're going to go to abuse animals. We are getting more and more into the train of fast food, too. And we have all this farming now from transnational companies coming to Mexico, paying very cheap to people, and not having any kinds of, you know, standards for the treatment of animals. And it's ridiculous wars and in the state, you know, the raising and farming of animals for food here.
Mm.
So it is very worrying, you know, the way we are becoming regarding animals, because, you know, Mexico as a society has also different values that are being lost, you know. And pretty soon, I think people will look at animals just completely objects here, like, you know, there's something in the United States that I want to buy a cat, a dog, and then throw it away and have another one.
Right.
You know, those kinds of things that didn't happen when I was a kid in Mexico.
So you said that there's values that you feel are being lost. What are some of the values then within some of the different cultures in Mexico and different ways of thinking about animals that maybe are more positive?
Well, I can see a difference for animals in the South. I'm going to put you an example. For example, we have, you know, this is also a very complex question because we have so many different ethnic groups in Mexico, so many Indian groups with their languages and their culture, and they're very strong. Some of them are, I don't know if it's the negative, they've been isolated from the mainstream culture, the Mexican culture. And so let's take the example of the people in the South, the Maya. You know, I was talking to some Maya activist girls a few years ago, and they had a big fire in the forest in their village. And so they didn't want to help them out, the government in the municipal city, to bring, you know, the firefighters to start to attack that fire. So they organized all the people there, and they were almost all women. They organized and they spent 3 days putting down the fire with small, tiny containers. They're almost all women and children. But they told me that they were really worried because the precious birds, that's what they say, precious birds, live in this area and they don't want it to die and being destroyed their habitat. So, you know, there is much more sensibility and appreciation towards animals in some, you know, Indian communities, let's say, right, than in the big cities in Mexico. And they do have a long, you know, history of relationship with animals, some of the stories, you know, some of the religious aspects too. And the most isolated they are, you know, the less that I see that they treat bad animals, that they modify the idea of the animals as things or commodities.
Right.
So, you know, we have all that richness in the country, and we do, I think that's something that I'm interested in. We do need to take consideration into account, and you need to work with that too, you know, and bring it up again to the broader population in Mexico, because we did have some of the values to before the old people.
We're going to take a short break because we have to play some advertisements, and then we'll come back
okay. And
continue speaking. And I don't know if you wanted to bring on the other guest as well. We can love to speak with her as well. You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5. We're going to take a short musical break, come back with Gerardo Tristan Alvarado, and speak with him and his companion talking about the National Coalition for the Welfare of Animals. Please stay tuned.
You're listening to Animal Voices on 89.5 CIUT FM. Back to you, Lauren and Rob.
Hi, welcome back to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. I wanted to let people know that if you wanted to hear this program again or any of our past programs, you can go onto our website at animalvoices.ca. Again, that's animalvoices, all one word, .ca. Or you can write us at animalvoices@ciut.fm if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for upcoming shows. Today we're speaking with Gerardo Tristan, and we are also speaking with his friend Anna, and I wanted to welcome them back to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on the show today. So before the break, we were talking about some of the different perspectives from different ethnic groups within Mexico, and their, I guess, how some of these values are being degraded within because of globalization, and people are looking more and more and animals as commodities.
Yes.
I wanted to ask a question because it seems like part of, we were talking about the legal changes that the coalition would like to see happen. I was wondering if either of you think that the government will be willing to make some of these changes.
Yeah, I really think so. We are having Mexico now a totally different spectrum and a totally different scenario regarding politics. And we are on the verge of having an election here, July the 2nd. We'll go to, you know, vote. And, you know, it's being contested that, you know, it looks like it's going to change a lot, you know, again, the scenario with politics. And once that happened in Mexico, because we were not very used to that for the, when we had, you know, just one party for 78 years, something like that. I see that there is more room for improvement and, you know, there is new people coming to work in the presidency and the, what you call that, the advisors and the people that work in the cabinet, I don't know how to say. But then I think that it's going to be like that after elections. We'll have a totally new party ruling, you know, it looks like, and we will have room for improvement. And, you know, the government more and more is sensitive to international opinion. You know, and so we became a solid coalition, a coalition that can be recognized and can talk to other groups, you know, internationally. Then we'll get more power, and then the government kind of have to listen to us. There is another coalition that is being formed that I am not involved. That is called. In the Latin American level, so they wanted to join all the countries and make an animal welfare coalition too. It's called ALAPA. And so it seems like, you know, people is organizing into that. It's the time for coalitions, you know, get all together and make our voices be heard. And, you know, people is also inviting people that work with environment, ecologists, environmentalists, into that discussion, because we think that all those issues are interconnected. Mm. You know? So I think, I really believe that the government is going to hurt us, you know, and probably we will be winning more and more in every state.
So how did both of you get involved with animal issues and become so passionate about working for animal advocacy?
Who, me?
Yeah, both of you, either.
Okay, Anna, if you wanted to answer that, why?
Okay, I think that that you get tired of seeing all the suffering on the street, and as Gerardo said, that like 10 years ago, that the laws were not, well, actually the laws are not helping a lot to us, but you get tired and you feel that you have to put your hands on. And so I guess that is something also that you have inside of your, as a personal issue. But then you you feel that you have to do something. And I guess that all in personally, me and other all the persons that are working, for example, in the organization where I am here locally in Monterrey, they have the same feeling. And well, we now with this coalition, we want to get united because we want to make a bigger movement. And as Gerardo said, that we know that when we get together, we can have a bigger impact on government, especially because it's a very important issue. The laws, we need laws to help us make this a real change on animal rights.
Yeah. For me, you know, I always been very passionate about animals because that's my upbringing. I, you know, that I'm a Mexican citizen, but I'm also an Aztec, you know, person, descendant, and culturally, you know, I've been brought that way as an Indian person. So I grew up with all kinds of stories, the relationship with animals and people. You know, they were all really fascinating things for me because, you know, the way I've been brought. And so I always been interested, and I always had a relationship with animals, domestic or other animals, you know. I'm fascinated by them. So at my capacity in different stages, I've been doing things, you know, to help animals, to help improve their welfare. So, I mean, it's been an, I think that it's been always present for me. My mother, she's very old now, and she's still an activist, you know, in her neighborhood. And she will always, you know, have great respect for animals and always teaches that animals have dignity and are equal to humans, you know, on the creator of God's eyes. So, nothing new for me.
Right.
But lately, I see the opportunity to, you know, work with more people, and there is more interest, you know, for many reasons in my country to work in awful situations. So I started to work 2 years ago more directly with organizations because before I just do it in my own. This is also a big change.
So do you, I mean, it seems like it's, for a lot of different activists all over the world, this is a very difficult battle to fight because of economics and because of globalization and just things, you know, a context in which people are needing to exploit animals more and more for monetary reasons. And I'm wondering how you see working for change given that context, because I don't know how hopeful. It sounds like at least you're somewhat hopeful about getting the larger public and population on your side, but how do you deal with that considering that there's also these economic reasons as well that people are exploiting animals?
Yeah, it is a really, really complex issue. But like I said before, we don't really benefit, and we have not realized that from this situation, from being always so anthropocentric, you know, so center in our own, you know, little sphere. We are not benefiting. We see that there is a devastation of the world because this kind of culture, mentality, philosophy that you just put the human beings as the center of the universe, and everything else, other beings and the nature and the resources are all just for us to consume and to just do whatever we want. So, you know, this has a lot of implications that people have not started to realize. And I think we are fighting the same battle as ecologists, you know, as people that talk about human rights, because after all, if you don't respect animals, you won't respect human beings. You know, that's a fact for me. There in Mexico, we have problems, a lot of problems now with violence and a lot of misogynous, you know, incidents. We have a problem at the border where a lot of women are being killed, you know, and those have these roots for me, you know. So there are many, many, many issues in the world that people don't see as have any connection with animals, but they do, you know. So we have to, you know, start to realize those things, and people in general, the public, needs to realize those things too, you know. Start to move more into that and think further, you know, about those issues. Because all the issues that affect animals, environment, affect humans, even if we don't realize. As I just say, we have, you know, globalization. And globalization doesn't mean that, you know, we're just going to have all this bad stuff coming. We can change, you know, the tendency and make it work for our benefit to us as a being, you know. So we can all, like, for example, in globalization, share ways in which animals and people maybe in some kind of environment help each other and have, like, a balance where people get benefit, yes, from animals, and animals get benefit from people, and they all survive, you know. And because I see also in Mexico that my family is in the north, and I see that Monterrey as a city is looking towards the first world, towards the United States, and what was going to happen when the whole world looked towards that that model, we're going to destroy the world because we cannot keep that kind of life, you know, the American kind of life. And I don't think it's being something healthy for the world or for us to adopt everybody this model.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people getting more and more stressed. It's not just a question of surviving and having food on the plate, but also having status, power, you know, and things. So, you know, this model needs to be put in the spot and examined and seen as something that's not good for any being, you know. And obviously, there people will talk about human beings, so it's not good for human beings. Yeah, I see that there is a lot of challenges. And some people will say, well, you know, that is my source of income. And if you can realize that the animal has feeling and suffers, maybe you can treat it good, you know. You don't have to go all the way to cut that source of income in a first step, because we cannot change society like that. But we have to put, you know, certain values, and we have to start to put in the minds of people the power of imagining a different world. This is very important for me. It's the first step. And in the United States and other countries, the movement works differently, right? But also more wealthy countries. And so we need to work a little bit, putting attention, of course, to like Anna and her organization is doing, you know, to the day-to-day, rescuing animals from the streets and suffering, you know, things like that. But we need to be more creative and to think, you know, that we wanted to give things that can probably modify really, really our views, our culture, everything, the way we see ourselves and animals. Right? For that, we need all together and need further discussion. And here's where experiences and other histories, you know, and other cultures come really, really, you know, they are useful for us. We can adopt some of the values and stories and, you know, just spread them, you know. I mean, I can think that it would be really happy for me to see that in Mexico, finally, the system of education, public system of education, adopt some of the values of compassion, you know, and teach that in the schools instead of things that are not useful, and take, you know, to teach that, take the story of some Indian group in Mexico, or, you know, some other things, that tools, you know. So I'm talking about, you know, stages, and I know, and I'm conscious that it won't be easy, and we are fighting a battle that is being there forever. It's like a giant, you know. It's in our conscience, you know. It's in our system of values, in our view of the world, and our religions and philosophy. So there's everywhere, you know, we have this thing that we call specificism. So we're going to need to, you know, fight that too. We cannot just, you know, make some kind of cosmetic changes and not fight the deep root of this problem.
We only have a couple more minutes left. I wanted to make sure that you could give information to our listeners about if they want to find out more about the National Coalition for the Welfare of Animals.
Sure.
Or issues about animals in Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to mention that we really think that support, international support, is very important for us. And we think that we can work, you know, globally in regarding actions, concrete actions. We are thinking that in 2007, we wanted to have a candlelight for animal dignity, and we love to have people, you know, contacting us from different cities, different countries, and saying, you know, we are interested in support that and recognize animal dignity. And just like, you know, here we are, 10 people that are going to hold this candlelight in my hometown, in my city. And that way, you know, that will be a global connection for them. Animal rights movement or animal liberation movement. And, you know, when people come to Mexico to visit, also, you know, be informed, you know, and to look to probably if there is something that is happening, to just participate by you being there, right? like in 2007, we're going to have this huge forum. And if people make plans, want to travel to Mexico, they might as well look into that.
Right.
Hang out, too. So we would love to have all kinds of international support. And it would be like something that we all can support also other people, you know, with their initiative. But for us, you know, this concrete thing that I was mentioning, this concrete action is something that is symbolically very important to open up more the discussion in the animal rights movement or animal liberation movement further with all the groups internationally and the individuals that are concerned, you know, about animal welfare.
We only I have to interrupt you. We only have a minute left because we're just wrapping up the program. But I want to make sure that people have that information about where they can contact you, and we can post it on our
website. Yeah, well, I'm going to give my email.
Okay.
And I promise to answer everybody. My email is like my name.
Okay.
GERARGO, and then PRISTAN. That's all together.
Right.
At AOL.com.
Okay, so how are there, Tristan, at AOL.com?
Yeah, then I promise to, I'm going to refer them to their webpage when we have it done for the coalition.
Okay.
That will be pretty soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great, thank you
thank
so
you
much.
Thank you, everybody.
Anna, thank you, too. Sorry we couldn't talk with you more.
Yeah, I know. Well, thank you, this is very interesting.
We would love to have both of you back on to find out about how this work is going in the future as well. So hopefully we'll talk to you both again. Well, we really appreciate it. Thank you for being on Animal Voices today.
Thank you for inviting us. Have a good day.
You're welcome. Yeah, have a good day too. And good luck with the summit. Bye. You've been listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. That show should be archived that we just did on our website, animalvoices.ca, sometime within the next week or week and a half. Wanted to thank Lamia for teching Rob for doing the news. Please stay tuned for Roadrunner on CIUT 89.5.